guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Final hour, Felger, Maz, Big Jim Murray in our update studio. Murray, what did you just say to me off the air? What's this?
Well, there
feels to be a Malcolm Butler benching counteroffensive.
Yeah, I was just checking out this new website, butlerbenchingincontext.com. And, you know, there's now articles up there by Bedard, my man Gasper, you know, videos of Malcolm Butler getting turned inside out week after week as a member of the Tennessee Titans. And it goes on to explain, again, at butlerbenchingincontext.com, why Bill was justified in sitting this player who played over 90% of the snaps on defense last year in Super Bowl 52.
I'm an idiot. Are you making that up?
Yes.
Okay. Don't put it past these people, because these people had Wells report in context in which they told you the deflator was doing to lose weight.
Yeah, no, right.
So they will stop at nothing. But there does feel to be a Butler benching Super Bowl counteroffensive in the game week. Wow. Okay, so let's go. Let's fight. I'm willing to engage. You know me. I'll go back and pick at a zit for freaking years. No problem.
This is annoying, though. Like, how can you justify that? You can't.
John in Las Vegas, what's your question?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Love the way you do business. I have two questions, and I will be quick. Question one, do you think Malcolm Butler still harbors any resentment or ill will towards Belichick? And question two, I've always wanted to know, who is your least favorite coworker? It's got to be Sarge, right?
Okay, that's a Sarge call. Do you think there's any grudges at play here this week? And here's my developing opinion, okay? No.
Well, Butler got his money.
No. They didn't exactly bury the hatchet, but my belief, and this happens all the time with all sorts of different players, they came to an understanding. They came to an understanding in the offseason where there were conversations in which Bill said to Malcolm, we all know what happened, but you're not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it. You got your money. You were made whole at the end of the day. You got every dime you were asking for. You got your job. You got your money. You're going to go on and say nice things about us, and we're going to say nice things about you. And that has been the deal from the day that, well, maybe the day after the Super Bowl, because Butler did chirp right after the game.
He did, yeah, while he was walking to the bus.
Well, walking to the buses, he chirped. But from that point forward, there has not been a acrimonious word said from Butler to the team, and not even a subtle shot from Bill to the player. And Bill can take subtle shots now, like we've seen it all the time, where you just got to read a little bit between the line or in some tone. And Bill's nowhere near this. And if I'm not willing to go here, but the next level of that conspiracy theory is that the Titans gave him the money, and the Titans has a former Patriots GM there and the former Patriots coach there. It's like Patriots South. And it's like, well, if Jimmy were being a real wise ass, what would he call it?
Hush money.
So I'm not willing to go there. I'm just saying that like that's the next fun angle to that.
So Bill used another team to give a player hush money. Tremendous.
All I know is,
because if it,
well,
it got out, why he actually got benched again, if it got out.
Horrible for the Patriots. Horrible. I mean, there's no good reason. And when and if it comes out that it's even something even ticky-tack or personal, oh, my God. Like, that's a – it is right now, but it's a legacy-altering kind of thing for Bill Belichick. Malcolm, you're not talking about it. I'm not talking about it. Whenever anyone's asked, you have nothing but good to say about your time in New England and respect for the Patriots. And when I'm asked, I have nothing but nice things to say about you and my respect for you as a player. Like, for example, at the owners' meetings. Here's Belichick at the owners' meetings this past March, I think.
You know, I have a lot of respect for Malcolm from the day he got here in rookie minicamp 4 years ago. He's always competed as hard as he could. He always was a great competitor on the field, and I totally respect that. You know, I'm not going to get into last year. I'm not going to get into next year or some other year. I talked to Malcolm. I wish him well at Tennessee. Obviously, Mike and John are great people I have a lot of respect for in that organization. I have a lot of respect for Malcolm, and, you know, we wish him well.
Talk to Malcolm. Talk to John and Mike, my former personnel guy, my former player who's now the coach down there. We all talked. Malcolm Butler's asked, he does his own sort of signing special, the E60 thing. He's asked about this.
I got a call from Bill Belichick You know, he told me, congratulations, you're with a good team, good organization. I know those people, and thank you for everything you've done. You know, I appreciate it. No bad blood between me and Bill Belichick.
He called to congratulate me and tell me to shut the F up. That call is Bill, like, with Garoppolo, I get it. Most other free agents, is he calling to congratulate Logan Mankins on a free agent contract? Or, I mean, it's a bad example. Did he call, because they traded Mankins?
Logan Ryan.
Did he call Logan Ryan? Did he call Chandler Jones? Did he call, again, he was traded. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
No, he didn't call him to congratulate him. He called him to set the ground rules.
Welker.
Did he he called Butler to lay out the way it's going to go down.
Amendola.
Which is this. You're getting your money, and you're going to shut your mouth, and we're not going to say anything, and you're not going to say anything. And this is hardly exclusive. The call, you know, I think they had to hammer that out. They do NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. They do stuff with the guys all the time. Like, this is routine for them. Now, very few guys badmouth the team on the way out the door. You think that's by coincidence? No, they have to sign something. Like, there's agreements, whether it's signed or not, okay? And I doubt the Patriots are the only team. But they make sure there's no bad-mouthing on the way out the door. This thing, both Bill admits, he calls Butler after he signs. Butler gets a congratulatory. Thank you call from Bill Belichick. You're going to a good place. John and Mike, I know those guys. You're going to a good team.
Yeah, it's Nate Solder to get that call.
This is all about, Malcolm, we're not going back. You got your money. You got your job. We're all made whole. Zip it.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that might be true. I mean, they have some sort of, you know, I don't know, maybe Amendola didn't take the call. Like when they tried to call him, because he certainly shot his mouth off on the way out the door. Although it wasn't, you know, his problem. It was more about Butler's, even so. So maybe,
there's nothing to hide with Amendola. Is there something to hide with Butler? Maybe.
I'm sorry.
We still don't know what happened.
Yeah,
so there's an answer there.
You will never hear from me that the Patriots are justified in sitting Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. You will never hear those words from my lips. They will never come out.
Because it's asinine. It's unjustifiable. No matter how bad. Even if he...
Outside of burning down an orphanage or pushing an old woman down the stairs, he should have played in that game in the second half at some point. I don't care if he was selling weed that week or whatever the nonsense happened. He was in uniform, put him in for a couple of plays on defense while you're getting gouged by a backup quarterback.
So, but you're not going to hear even any tone from Belichick. But as often happens, maybe there's some back channeling going on because there is a commentary counteroffensive on the Malcolm Butler benching in the Super Bowl. So,
tell you what I would love to see Sunday is for Tennessee to put him on Edelman. That to me, that's the guy I'd put Butler on. I feel he's most suited to cover him anyway.
He'd get torched.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. Butler runs side to side pretty well, and I'm not sure Edelman's moving the same way he has in the past.
I would put him on Gordon because I'm sorry. I think Gordon's an easy cover right now. I don't think Gordon's getting separation. I think he's going up in traffic and catching the ball.
Gordon will box him out.
So maybe.
Yeah, in terms of height, Logan Ryan, I think, would get that assignment.
All I'm saying is I don't think Josh Gordon's a hard cover. He was wide open last game because there was that massive fake in which Tom Brady pump-faked half the Packer defense. There was no one around him. There was no one to uncover. But has he really gotten open, quote-unquote, or has he just caught a bunch of balls in traffic?
No, he's caught balls in traffic. Yeah, totally. But again, I'd put him on Edelman. I bet you get Butler's best this week.
I just love that you actually thought Butler benching in context.com was real.
It could be. I put nothing past these people, the Patriots and the PR offensives. I put nothing past them. But just wait. Just see if the domain. I bet you the domain will be, now that you've said it, it's going to happen. It will happen. Butler benching in context.com. That is great. All right. So, we'll take a break here, and then I promise to get back to your phones. Felger and Mass.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Stay off the weed. There are some reports where they're alluding to that was a possibility. So I'm not about to absolve Malcolm Butler. You brought in second and third stringers, mm-hmm, while leaving Malcolm Butler on the bench for the Super Bowl. You got a championship on the line. Evidently, this brother was reliable enough over the course of 3 years where he just missed one start. Over the course of 3 years. But you're going to wait until Super Bowl Sunday to make this statement. Not to mention the fact, not only did you make the statement, but you made it right before the national anthem was played. Come on now. Bill Belichick, to me, is the greatest coach of the generation.
Yeah.
But you to do something, this is
wait,
pure.
Time out.
This looks like pure evil.
All right, as promised, your phones, Felger Mass. Ron in Rhode Island. Thanks for hanging on. Ron, what do you got?
Yes, I just want to say that Rabel, when he played for the Patriots, he was openly critical of Bob Kraft for building the Patriot Place Mall. He thought the money should have been given to the players. Shortly after that open criticism of Bob Kraft, he was given to the Kansas City Chiefs. Malcolm Butler was highly critical of Kraft for not paying him and made many derogatory and disrespectful comments towards Mr. Kraft. All of these comments got back to Bill Belichick before the Super Bowl. The assassin in the Patriots organization is not Bill Belichick. It's Bob Kraft.
Ron, I'm going to stop you. Thank you for the call. The Vrabel thing, I agree with you 100%. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that really pissed me off about the Patriots. It was one of the people asked me, like, when did you turn? Why did you get so critical? You know, I just stopped buying their bull crap at some point along the way. And the Vrabel thing was one of the things that really pissed me off. He did. He did a story with Ron Borges, Boston Herald.
It's a memorable story.
I cut and pasted it just today. It was in November of 2007. He was gone by February of 2008. The owners had just opted out of the last couple of years of their CBA. And Mike Vrabel had just been voted a player rep. And Mike Vrabel, because he has a mind of his own, and he's not petrified of Bill to the point where he won't talk like an actual human being, answered some questions about it. And about the state of the NFL and the owners. And the big beef at that point was the owners not opening up their books and showing the players how they were losing money or how the margins weren't working. And so Vrabel said in this story things like, quote, "It's like Chris Rock says," Vrabel joked, "you think Shaq is rich. What about the guy who pays Shaq?" Later, he said on owners not opening their books, "How bad are their books? We asked to see their books and they won't open them. These franchises are worth billions." Then on Patriot Place, probably the money quote that got him traded.
This is the one that hurt.
He's standing in the parking lot with Borges outside the stadium. He says, "You look around here at what they've built. Every bit of it is tied to the team, but none of that revenue is included. I'm curious about how that goes. How did this get built? Where did the revenue come from?" That was in November of 2007. In February 2008, he was gone for nothing. Tacked on to the Matt Cassel trade to the Kansas City Chiefs. Garbage. Garbage move by the team. That's an all-time great Patriot who should have been here from day one to his last. Embodied everything that you possibly stood for. But he mentions the money and he's gone. So that, I'm with you on Vrabel. Butler, I think, was something that happened with the coach or the staff or something along the way. It was personal between the coach and the owner's not going to bench a player for the Super Bowl because of a contract. He may trade him in the offseason. So maybe that's why Butler wasn't re-signed. Butler had pissed everybody off by that point. Never mind his play had fallen off. I'll buy that. For that singular benching, he was in uniform.
No, that one's on Bill.
So do you think that, so going back, because I remember that story, but it's been so long, do you think that Bill's hand was forced a little bit to move on from Vrabel after that?
Maybe, yeah.
Because
maybe.
I find it interesting, when he was first asked about him after the game, this last game, he said, oh, he should be in the Patriots Hall of Fame, which stood out to me. I was like, oh.
Well, but what's interesting is that Vrabel, the first Vrabel cut I played for you today, when he talked about Bill, he said, "I was traded and we didn't talk for months, maybe a year." So Vrabel was pissed, and he may have held it against Bill, or...
Well, he might have been pissed that Bill didn't defend him.
There was a whole falling out there. And Vrabel said, then we patched it up, and we've been, you know, close ever since. But I always blamed his trade on those Patriot Place comments.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, again, I don't think there's any question. Now, you might remember better than I.
And this started the whole thing, because Vrabel, again, I know I'm pumping into this guy's tires, but I think he was really important to what you did that first half of the dynasty. And he left in 08, after 08, right? No, he left, I'm sorry. He was traded, I got my time wrong.
Going into 08?
No,
he was traded going into 09.
Traded going into 09. So those comments were November of 08. He was traded February of 09.
Okay.
But that's when it all sort of went south in your locker room. That 09-10, that little time frame, you moved on from Vrabel, you moved on from Seymour, you moved on from these guys.
Yeah, all the guys who had a mind.
And in their void came Randy Moss and all this garbage in your locker room.
Thomas.
And it all went down. And that was all part of it. And so, I mean, I thought that was a huge mistake by the team. It was a labor thing. So he's a rep and he's doing the rep thing. And you're on ownership and you're doing the ownership thing. And it's a CBA battle. It happens every 10 years, 8 years. Don't hold that against the guy. He should have been here. He should have finished his career here.
Totally. I mean, to me, there's a direct correlation there. The only thing I don't remember, maybe you do, they've traded other guys too, right? It's not like Vrabel was the first. They traded Mankins. They traded Seymour. So what I don't remember is what Vrabel's contract status was at the time.
I don't think it was bad.
Whether he was due for any sort of raise coming up and they weren't going to give it to him or what.
I don't think.
But those small comments, I remember it. I mean, if I remember it, it was a Sunday paper. I mean, back when we read the paper. If you can digest that. And it did. It buried him. That was it for him.
Kevin in Worcester. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, what's going on? I want to touch base with the Vrabel before I get to Malcolm. I agree with you 100%. It had to do with the comments. You know, he was a leader in that locker room, and it went south once he was gone and a few others that were part of that little dynasty. But with Malcolm Butler, that his move on not playing him in the Super Bowl is unforgivable. That probably goes down to one of the biggest mistakes that he's made in coaching history, because you can't bench a player. I don't care exactly what Murray said, short of murder. Like, he should have been on that field. We were getting murdered in the secondary, and he was sitting on the bench.
Bill did not use something at his disposal to see if he could correct a problem. That's unforgivable. Unforgivable. No one in the secondary was making a play. You had another guy on your bench who was in the secondary. You could have tried a different look and a different mix and a different matchup, and he never even tried. How do you defend that?
You don't.
And to me, I don't second guess benching him to start the game. You don't want to start with him? Fine. You did something during the week or you didn't think he was good enough? Don't start him. No problem. Once your defense is giving up 500 yards to a backup quarterback, you won't try a different matchup to see if you can affect the outcome? You won't do it? How is that possibly defendable? How is that defensible in any way, shape, or form?
I don't know. He created Malcolm Butler on the Super Bowl stage, and he destroyed him there. That's how he looked at it.
Mike in Rhode Island. Hi, Mike.
Hey, great show. Unbelievable what you're saying about Vrabel. I didn't know any about that. But I called because you were talking about Chris Hogan. You know what? Why does Chris Hogan, every time he catch a ball, point like he's got a first down? And if he's not doing that, he's looking for a flag. I mean, I don't think the guy's good enough to play on any other team in the NFL. I mean, he ought to be just kissing the ground that he walked on. I just don't think he's that good.
Have you noticed this sort of stuff from Hogan?
No.
I mean, nothing that I would say that separates him from any other receiver who points on a first down. And I don't think it's on every catch. And I disagree with him on Hogan. Hogan's a functional NFL receiver. He's not a number one or number two receiver, but you put him on the right team, he can help a lot of teams. He could help New Orleans. I mean, you know, and I'm just throwing teams out there that throw the ball a lot, like the Patriots do, and have an experienced quarterback. Hell, he'd probably help Green Bay, for crying out loud. But the bottom line is that he was overrated when he got here because, you know, this was, again, when I say overrated, you know, this was classic Patriot fans saying, yeah, Bill will get something out of him. And as long as you have him slotted correctly, he's fine. He's fine. I'm not telling you he sucks. I like Hogan. We like the work ethic and everything else that goes with it. But he's not going to get separation on any good defensive back.
Bob in Marlboro, hi.
Yeah, that was the thing of the Maz that he should have listened to Paul, because Paul's right on the two plays, the trick plays. He was right. It bailed out the game. It bailed out the game. He wants to put the heat on Brady. Listen to Paul. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, babe. Yeah, it helped you win the game. No question. Does it concern you that you had to resort that to beat a bad team at home? That's the question. And if it doesn't concern you, then it doesn't concern you. But you're sort of missing the... No one ever said they were bad plays or that they didn't help you. Of course they helped you.
I mean, people miss the point on this discussion, which I find frustrating. It's not about whether or not they won the game and the plays worked. They did work. Typically, they don't do that sort of stuff until they absolutely have to. Like, again, I don't know what you know, look at their recent history. They did it in the Baltimore playoff game because they were up against it and they were down 14 points and the game was getting away from them. And they did it against Atlanta in the Super Bowl. It didn't work.
And Perillo said in 14 when they sprung against the Ravens, they actually used a couple of them in Kansas City that same year when they were getting thumped out of desperation.
Correct.
So this was, wow, they considered that a desperate situation at home against a horrible Green Bay team? So that's the question. If you don't think that's concerning, then fine. No problem. No one said they didn't work. Here's Andy in Scituate. Hi, Andy.
Hey, so I heard on your Facebook live show, I think it was about a month ago, you guys have heard a Malcolm Butler rumor about why he didn't start.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell me?
No.
I mean, like,
no.
What did he do? Did he sleep with the coach's wife? Like,
no.
I need to know.
No.
You can't tease me like that.
Yes, I can.
Come on, just tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you. No way. Someone's got to do it first, and then we'll pile on. Someone's got to do it first. I heard what I believe has the whiff of truth to me, and I believe it, but I have no idea if it's true or not.
Same.
I'll tell you what, I still think that that's only a part of the story. Like, I don't think it's a straight cause and effect. I think there were other elements at play. Belichick had a level of disdain for this guy for not accepting the contract. That was there. There was a baseline of frustration with the player because they felt like the player wouldn't work with them anymore.
I don't think there's any question about that.
So if that hadn't existed, I don't know what happened.
So they were on bad terms to begin with. And then we heard of a little something that happened during the week that is not against the law, or it was
not even salacious.
I found it catty.
Please tell me. Please tell me. Just me. Just please tell me.
I'm waiting for someone to do it first, and then we'll talk about it.
Please?
I'm not doing that.
I'm just telling you, though.
Ready, please, with sugar on top?
Phil's nature was apparent in the Welker thing, too, when that whole thing went down. And that, because remember, Welker's last year here, when they were frustrated at their inability to come to a contract agreement with him. Do you remember that early in the year, all of a sudden, Edelman had a better camp. Edelman's a better player. They were going to start phasing Welker out. They were doing the same thing to Welker they did to Butler. Again, don't judge them on what they say. Judge them on what they do. That Bill does that sort of stuff. And most of the time, he's right.
Michael Felger. Tony Maserati. Felger and Maz. Every afternoon, it's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It really is a difference maker.
Ooh. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
When you play man coverage, you have to look at your man, and you know Malcolm knows that, and we've talked about that, and we continue to practice it, we continue to coach it, and we try to show it to him. When he does that, it's pretty good. It's competitive. He challenges the receivers, and then you know when you look back at the quarterback, your man has a tendency to go in another direction.
Simple as that. I'm Malcolm Butler, says Vrabel. He peeks into the quarterback. Jumps routes, susceptible to double moves. Simple as that.
I think it's right, but watch the one he gave up the other night to Dallas. It's totally what happened. He peaked and he lost sight of the receiver and the guy took off and that was the end of it.
So here's what I'd be surprised with this week, is if Vrabel allows the Patriots to pick Malcolm Butler apart. That would surprise me. I mean, again, he's been arguably the worst corner in football or among them, giving up the most plays as anyone at that position in the league. So whether it's a Patriot thing or not, it's like anyone who's game planning against the Titans is going to look out at 21 and try and throw against him. And at some point, you know, if you got half a brain as a coach, you've got to protect that player. So whether it's the Patriots or not, but I would say especially because it's the Patriots, because they're prone to, you know, pick on your weakness. I'd be stunned if Vrabel would let him do it. I'd be stunned. And it would be, you know, it would be a sign that he doesn't get it as a coach.
I mean, if you're playing man-to-man, where do you put Butler?
So maybe I don't go man-to-man, or maybe I protect him, or I put him on Hogan, or I give him a matchup he can win, or I give him help. I put him on Gordon and give him help over the top. That's what I would do. Again, I think Gordon is a coverable guy, meaning you can run with him. The ball's in the air, you're right, Butler's going to be at a big disadvantage there because of his size. But I protect him, just how the Patriots would protect one of their off corners. I would protect him. And maybe tying into what I said before, I'm not necessarily sure the Pats are going to just go all out to pick on Malcolm Butler. I mean, especially if the Titans are protecting him. If there's shaded coverage to Malcolm Butler's side to help him, is he going to say to Brady, throw it into the protected area because we want to pick on this guy?
No.
That would be dumb. That'd be, once again, using a personal agenda in a football game. We've already done that with Malcolm Butler, haven't we, Bill? So why not make the problem? Let's not make the problem worse, and they won't. They'll go to where the openings are. So, I wouldn't be surprised if the Malcolm Butler thing is a non-story in the game.
At some point, they'll take a shot at him. They'll get a matchup they want, and they'll take a shot at him. I have a hard time believing they're going to go the whole game and not take a shot at him. And I'm not telling you it'll be 10 targets. I'm telling you that it'll be well calculated.
Here's the thing with Vrabel that I think gives him hope that he can be a coach. Again, I have no idea if he is or not. But I don't think he's a play caller. I think Dean Pease runs the defense and calls the defense, and he's got an offensive coordinator who calls the offensive plays. Like, the name escapes me right now. But I don't see Vrabel on the sidelines with a play sheet in his hand, with his head buried in the play sheet, which is a really encouraging sign, because it feels like all these coaches now, they're either one side of the ball or the other, and they turn over the other side to the other coordinator, and that's why they can't coach the team or the game or the clock. They're just buried in their specific play sheet. And I don't think Vrabel does that.
No, no. He strikes me as the leadership skills with Vrabel are there. I don't think that that's the issue. Now, again, experience, and I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens, and I don't think he's afraid. I mean, I think that's been evident in his coaching already, and I don't think he's going to be psyched out going against Belichick. I think there's that element there. The one thing I look at with Tennessee, how are they going to score? I think they're 29th in the league in offense.
So Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis is how they're going to move the ball. Is he a touchdown maker?
I mean, to what they should try to do is avoid, you know, I say avoid, try to get the ball to Lewis outside of the red zone in the air so there's a little space to run in. Like, if you can do that, you're going to get him in some sort of pass matchup and then get him the ball in space, then you're okay, because the Patriots can't cover him like they can't cover any back.
We continue with your thoughts. Seth and Taunton. Hi, Seth.
Hey, guys. So I think your trick play theory about desperation and all that is kind of idiotic. Going back and watch the play.
I don't know if it's idiotic. It's definitely unpopular. That I've come to learn. Very unpopular.
Idiotic.
I'm sorry.
Completely idiotic.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
They pull trick plays out whenever they feel like it. Back in 07, they were pulling trick plays when they were beating teams 59-0. They pulled trick plays out against the Colts just to embarrass them, having sold their run eligible plays. They pull trick plays out for fun. I mean, they do it when they want to embarrass teams.
Do they do it, Seth?
There in Pittsburgh when
Seth.
He talked crap about Brady.
Do they also do it when they're desperate? Do they also do it when they're desperate?
Yes, they do.
Thank you. The witness may now step down from the stand. So, yes. I've said many times today, they do it when they're screwing around. They're doing it when they're trying to embarrass teams and run up the score? Sure. Yeah, they've done that too, for sure. And the mortar kick and that sort of stuff was sometimes they think the game's in hand and Bill just wants to try something that his father did with the Lions in 1932 and he'll do it. So that happens too. This was not a screw-around kind of game. This was more in the category of they needed it, which you just said they've done in the past as well. They did it in this game because they needed it. If you don't care about that, no problem. But they weren't doing it to practice it or to rub it in or anything like that.
Yeah, the part I would focus on is the inefficiency in their offense that led them to that. To me, that's really what it's about. And I'm surprised that given the options they had at their disposal between Edelman, White, Hogan, and Josh Gordon, that they had to resort to that.
This was Bedard's point. That is very unpopular. John in Stoughton. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, I've liked Bedard on you guys' show in the past, but seriously, like, did Bill's Mafia just get his newest member? I mean, the circle of klutz over there, they're always spewing out a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of vanilla pudding, feel good about Bill's decision, this and that. I swear, if he continues with this, I can't take him credibly anymore, and that decision was deplorable. It was awful in the Super Bowl with Butler.
So you confuse me except that last part. The decision on Malcolm Butler was deplorable. Deplorable to not use something at your disposal to see if you could help your team win a game. I wouldn't have cared if they sat Malcolm Butler out the entire first half, played him for two series in the third quarter, found out that he sucked and he couldn't cover anybody, and then put him back on the bench. At least then you've used everything at your disposal to see if you could solve the problem and win the game. And if it didn't work, it didn't work. He never even tried. It's in defense. I don't know how many times I have to say it. And there's now columns being written about how Bill's justified because Butler sucks.
Stop. Again, like, you know, just to look at the timeline.
Go ahead, Murray. Has someone taken the domain yet?
Someone has taken the domain, which...
Of course.
Butler, ButlerBenchingInContext.com. And if you put that in your web browser, it immediately takes you to Patriots.com.
That is tremendous.
So does that mean the Patriots grabbed it?
I don't know. I think so. If I had to guess,
someone bought it and redirected.
Yeah, I think someone's just being kind of a
wise ass,
a cheeky monkey here.
Yeah, like it.
ButlerBenchingInContext.com.
So let me get this straight.
It's now a real thing.
Before the season started, Belichick was willing to give this guy $7 or $8 million a year. Remember that offer was out there? And then they get into the season, and he's ready to take him off the field 3 games in and then bench him in the Super Bowl. The same guy. Boy, he must have been really dumb then to offer that contract in the first place, huh?
Well, he must have been dumb to play him 99% of the snaps during the year if he wasn't even good enough to play in the Super Bowl.
I mean,
Perillo said this.
They got lucky that Butler turned it down.
Telling you, has to be the worst coaching job in the history of football, that a guy that you don't deem good enough to play in the Super Bowl, you played 99% of the time in the regular season. That is some lousy coaching right there, man. Why would you play someone so awful 99% of the time? Why would you offer him $7 million a year, as you said?
Yeah, good question. I mean, but they got lucky that he did not accept that. That was a gift. Thank goodness he didn't accept that contract.
We're the wrong show to go back to this kind of stuff with, because I'll do it all day long, every day. You know I will. Hoagie and Swampscott. Go ahead, Hoagie.
Yeah, lads, I mean, this is just ludicrous. There's no way that Butler should not have played in the Super Bowl. I don't care how bad that Krispy Kreme Bedard thinks he was playing beforehand. And there's no way you can tell me that Jordan Richards deserved to be in the field over Malcolm Butler. Jordan Richards is probably the worst football player I've seen the Patriots produce in the last 10 years. Like, seriously.
So, again, the guys that played ahead of him in that game, Bademosi is in Texas?
Yes.
Houston, yeah. Does he play?
That I can't speak to. Let me look at some.
Okay, so
of
that's bad.
Jordan Richards apparently has become a starter in Atlanta.
No, they benched his ass.
No. I saw today. Who did I read today that he has started like the last 4 games?
Oh well, then they got problems because I saw one of their writers that covers the team say like this is one of the worst players that they've had on the roster in years.
I'll look it up.
Well, those players were so valuable that you ditched them in the offseason. You didn't bring them back. You didn't bring them back for. Were they both gone by the preseason? You didn't bring them back for camp. The two players that you would not take off the field for just a series to play Malcolm Butler. Joe in the car. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, guys. So my thing is, I don't think it was Belichick that had the issue with Butler. It was his baby boy, Steve. He went in crying to daddy saying, I have an issue with Malcolm, and then they benched him. And then also I wanted to bring up Cole Beasley, I think, is up for a contract at the end of the year. I think he'd be a perfect guy to bring in to replace Amendola.
Okay, and Dallas, I've loved that player. Has he fallen off the map a little bit?
He's kind of taken a beating. Yeah, I don't think he's having the season that he's had in the past. Let me look at his numbers, too. Like, I feel like I've always liked him. He was like Edelman Light.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if he hasn't had a good season, good. You saw all the more reason to bring him in with a good quarterback.
The
value's
buy
down.
Low, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, again, I don't know how old he is, though. He's up there, isn't he?
Oh, geez, look at this story. Cole Beasley, Cowboys, heading full speed towards divorce in 2019. Okay, so maybe he ends up here. Let's see. Yardage. Oh, go on.
Okay. Here's Bill in the truck. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how are we doing? I just wanted to throw by you. So you have the big bonehead play by Pete Carroll, Halo. It's a good play if it works, but it was the biggest mistake ever. But then you have Belichick. Repeatedly about 50 or 60 plays not putting Butler in. Which one was a bigger mistake? Thank you.
So
interesting question.
Yeah, Pete Carroll's was a bigger mistake. Like, you know, mistake like, whoops, you know, you trip over something, like you just spur the moment, do something wrong. Bill's was a more calculated.
Reveals a greater flaw.
Intentional, like, there was nothing mistaken about what Bill did. He intended to do it. He did it. It was, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if I'm describing myself
properly. No, you're right. Again, I would say that the Butler decision revealed one of Belichick's flaws. You know, call it a weakness of his. Whereas the Carroll decision was just stupid. Singular, like, stupid decision.
Oh, no. I can't believe I just did that.
Yes. No, that's right. I mean, maybe it also revealed one of Carroll's character weaknesses, which is stupidity. Maybe that's what it is. But in the case of Bill, his vanity, if that's what you want to call it, or arrogance, his ability or his tendency to think that he can coach his way around anything, bit him in the ass. Because that one is just plain as day. Like, so, with all the things that were going on the field that day, you don't think Malcolm Butler could have helped you over Jordan Richards?
The fact that you weren't even given a chance is the problem.
Okay, so just real quick. Johnson Bademosi has a total of 2 tackles this year for the Houston Texans, and Cole Beasley at 366 yards and just 2 touchdowns.
How old is he?
He is.
He'll be 30 in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm still taking a crack at that, I guess. Story for another day. Final word is next.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, The Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Mass's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Mass, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go. Town Fair Tire, the best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Quick programming note. The off-air show returns tonight in about 10 minutes. 6:05 on Facebook Live. Myself, Ty Anderson, is going to sit in with me. We'll go over the... he's a leading member of the Boohoo Tuca crew. So we can get right back into the Tuca Rass stuff there with Ty Anderson. But anything else you want from the show that we have left to the side or you want to get to or whatever, join us on Facebook Live. Fire off your questions. We will answer them in real time. It's called The Off-Air Show. It's brought to you by Ace Ticket. It comes your way on Facebook Live at 6:05. Join us there. Go, yep. Murray.
Mike Talk Ty.
So we have a couple of a bit of a juxtaposition with callers here. First, Maz got mad with a caller who tried to justify his swearing yesterday.
Maddie in the car. Go ahead, Maddie. I'm Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon's a beast, Maz. Felger, you guys got to give this guy a chance. The kid's got talent. He snatches the ball. He reaches out. He goes after it. Nothing that Cooks couldn't do back in the day. The kid was garbage. Gordon's the f***er. Let's go.
Okay, baby. You can't say that word. Mike in the car. What do you got for us?
Felger, you hung up on me yesterday, you bag of dumps.
I don't remember. Go ahead, Mike.
I said the F word. You hung up on me.
Oh, yeah.
Then that one's on you.
You can't say the F word, Mike.
I heard Maz in the background. He's like, in the background. So laughing. But,
yeah, you know what, Mike? I'm dropping you now.
What? Okay.
Like, you heard me in the background? Too bad. You can't say the F word on the radio. Like, we got to explain that one? Seriously, I'm sorry. I'm dropping him. Sorry. I don't usually intervene like that. Like, yeah, well, if you say the F word, you can't say it.
So,
No, that was fine. No, but Maz, feel free to jump in any time like
that. Yeah, and all I said in the background was, oh, jeez. Okay, fine.
Dump his ass, Maz.
Yeah, call again and pull the same crap, and I'll dump your ass again.
We go from that kind of a caller to perhaps the best of all the callers. That would be Guy in Boston.
Oh, the best. Guy in Boston.
Hello.
Yeah, Guy, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, you keep saying the Titans have a lot of Patriot personnel. If I'm not getting Alzheimer's, I believe the Houston Texans do also. How did that game end up? Thank you.
The best sign off on radio.
Alzheimer's.
No question about it. Yeah. Yeah. If I have Alzheimer's, thank you.
He's a peach. Finally, it was a sunshine day, but with Paul Perillo of Patriots Football Weekly his Wednesday appearance. So that means the song was sung for Paul today by David Price.
I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name.
Hey, Paul.
I hear you now. I just can't stay inside all day.
Uh-uh.
I gotta get out. Get me some of those rays.
Ooh, it's hot.
Everybody's smiling.
Yeah.
Sunshine day.
Hey,
everybody's laughing.
Let's go
sunshine
for a walk.
Day. Everybody seems so happy today.
I'm never happy.
It's a sunshine day.
Not in Boston.
Hey, Paul, I hold all the cards now. Have you heard? I have the trump card. I would have struck you out back in the day there, baseball boy.
Another solid one.
Well, thank you.
Good job, Murray.
Excellent.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.